Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome, everyone, to, yes, our favorite edition of the Three Martini Lunch. It's the Friday edition, along with Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. And, Jim, if you had started a pool as to which media organization would grill President Obama most heading into the meat of the 2012 reelection season, most people probably would not have guessed Univision. But, of course, when you line up your other interviews with David Letterman, People Magazine, and Entertainment Tonight, I guess that's probably not a bad bet, but the president, I think...
Don't forget the pimp with the limp, Greg.
Yes, of course.
Miami radio talk show host in which President Obama talked about the Dolphins and the Bears and all the other really important pressing issues on September 11th.
That's exactly right. So not a high bar to clear here for Univision, but they did a good job. They grilled him on some pretty tough subjects. Obviously, immigration came up. They grilled him on Eric Holder. They grilled him on Libya, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But the one comment that's getting the most attention is also the one that Mitt Romney jumped on yesterday. Here is the president responding to what the biggest thing he's learned since becoming president.
You know, I think that I've learned some lessons over the last 4 years. And the most important lesson I've learned is that you can't change Washington from the inside. You can only change it from the outside. That's how I got elected. And that's how the big accomplishments like healthcare got done.
Jim, as you point out in the jolt, that was the exact same message the president had in 2008, so I'm not sure it's a lesson. And secondly, if there's any lesson about things being forced from the inside, I think healthcare is the number one example.
Yeah, actually, that's, you know, the strangest example for him is classic Washington backroom dealing. Remember the Cornhusker kickback and all the other thing, you know, ridiculous levels of arm twisting they were going to do. All the various sweeteners and exceptions they were going to make to get people to pass that bill. People who have listened to me ramble on about Obama know that this is a guy who often wants has very grand visions of change and you know his vision of a better world. And so he decides to become a community organizer, tries it for 3 years, and he'll be the first to tell you he didn't really do that much. Inner city Chicago is a tough place to improve people's lives, and he realized things weren't going anywhere. He decided he had to go to Harvard Law School. Goes to Harvard Law School, comes back, continues to be involved in that, but also is a professor, and all of a sudden he realizes, no, I got to get into politics. Community activism, community organizing just isn't doing it. I need to get involved as a state legislature. Gets involved in the state legislature, and usually in these jobs, within about 1 year, he gets bored, and he realizes he can't do what he wants to do, and he needs some other job that will make him able to do real change. And so within 4 years, he was running for the U.S. House, ran against Bobby Rush, didn't succeed. 4 years later, he's running for the U.S. Senate. He gets elected to the Senate, and, you know, within a very short time, Harry Reid is telling him, look, you're going to get bored here. You're not going to be able to do what you want to do, run for president. And lo and behold, he decides to run for president, and he gets elected president. And so there's, I think, back in 2008, I had noticed Obama had spent more time as a declared candidate for higher office than anybody else in the preceding 10 years. More than John Kerry, more than John Edwards, more than George W. Bush, just any other figure. So it's really kind of astounding. And I kind of joke that once Obama became president and found himself unable to enact real change the way he wanted to, he would either run for Pope or run for Secretary General of the UN. Or, you know, he keeps looking for that next step that will give him the power and the authority and the ability to create real change. And here he is, and all of a sudden he's realizing, oh, you know what? You can't do it from inside Washington after all. Well, Mr. President, we want to help you. Help us help you. You know, go back to Chicago. Go to the rumored big house in Hawaii you're building. Let Romney try it. In Jody Kantor's book, The Obamas, folks on our side might become sort of find a certain kinship with Michelle Obama because periodically she expresses a certain amount of skepticism that Obama's going to be able to do everything he wants to do. She kind of thinks that he's kind of got his head in the clouds and has these, you know, grandiose visions and that she's a little cynical about Washington and how it works. Well, lo and behold, here we are, and score 1 point for Michelle Obama. Her husband couldn't really bring the change, didn't really change the tone. In fact, the partisan passions are worse than ever. The other thing that's fascinating is David Axelrod was on the morning shows, and he kept saying how Obama is doing unbelievable preparation for the debates. He is going to be ready. He is, you know, he said, Axelrod honestly compared it to the preparations to the Normandy invasion. I figured you'd like that, Greg. Now, the interesting thing is that, boy, if you're really prepared for that, I didn't see it in this this interview yesterday, did you?
Well, he's been expecting softballs, and he'll probably get them as well from most of the debate moderators. So this might be the toughest interview he faces, unless he agrees to an interview with Fox News, which is about as likely as another Normandy invasion. So on to martini number two now, Jim, and it's Friday. As you know, if you spend a lot of time in prayer, the first thing you want to do after ending your time in prayer is to go out and burn things. Try to kill people, perhaps, if they're Americans. Well, that's what's happening, of course, in Pakistan and in several other Islamic countries around the world. That is usually the case, that post-Friday prayers are the most dangerous time there, as you pointed out in a jolt not that long ago. As we've already seen, Pakistan, we've kind of shuttered that embassy. There's already three people dead there, last I saw, and we're expecting pretty much chaos in a lot of other countries, although hopefully nothing to the extent that we saw on September 11th in North Africa. But once again, this is a situation where it's not getting any better, and it doesn't look like the media. You talked about Obama getting bored after a year. The media seems to be getting bored after a week.
Yeah, I have a post on Campaign Spot about this. Basically, in any country that's got a significant Muslim population, including Australia, the U.S. Embassy is taking security preparations, and they are telling Americans in that country, in some cases, stay indoors. In some cases, do not go out in public. At the very least, be aware of your surroundings. Be ready for things to get bad, basically. And already today, we're, you know, well into Friday in their time zones. Violent protests, thankfully nothing on the par of Benghazi, but they did have some broken windows and such at our consulate in a corner of India. Lots of chance of death to America, including by school children in Pakistan. It's bad. And one of the things that's fascinating, if you bother to read the foreign newspapers about this, is that this really didn't taper down after last Friday. It got better in some places, worse in others. Violent crowds, you know, I mean, clashing with police, burning Obama in effigy, burning the American flag, spitting, sometimes throwing rocks. It's been bad, and it really hasn't stopped. So one of the things kind of fascinating is that for all of last week, you know, the week of September 11th, this was a big deal, and deservedly so, and worthy of a lot of attention. And starting this week, it kind of, you know, faded into the background. You know, there's been some coverage of the warnings to the Benghazi consulate that were not apparently not taken seriously enough, and I'm glad the press is writing about that. But look, our diplomats living overseas are under siege, and that siege really hasn't been mitigated that much since September 11th. We're really on day 10 of this, and I'd like to see this get, you know, treated as the serious issue that it is. Not surprising these things happen on Friday. I remember, you know, being in Cairo in 2003, about 2 months after the Iraq war had begun, and being told to just be careful. People will be coming out of the mosques. They will be full of vigor, and, you know, they may or may not start an incident. I didn't encounter anything, so it doesn't mean every single Muslim coming out of every mosque is going to be in a mood to do something violent, but this is going to be the worst day of the week. What's interesting is that there's no indication that next week is going to be that much better, and there's no indication that, you know, next Friday is going to be that much better. We have a fire burning, and it is so far not going out all across the Muslim world.
Jim, I think the real blame for the lack of coverage in the last few days has to be at the feet of the Romney campaign. He hasn't released any statements for the media to jump all over in relation to a major story that they're ignoring for the sake of, you know, focusing on the timing and tone of his message. So without a second message to complain about the timing and tone of, how do we keep covering this story?
Maybe he could say that things have gotten 47% worse in the past 10 days.
Oh, very good. Well, martini number two and martini number three go together a little bit here. We are hearing through NBC News and other sources that national security officials have been looking at the slowing down of online services from banks like JP Morgan, Chase, and Bank of America. And they believe they're pretty sure it's hacking coming from Iran. And they've basically concluded that the Iranians just want to hack into these major banks. They're using, of course, this very amateurish video as an excuse for their outrage and their attacks on these services. But the national security officials saying that, no, this was just something they decided to do, and they're using that as a cover. Jim, it seems like from the congressional testimony up on Capitol Hill and now this report, the counterterrorism people get this, and the president still doesn't get the message, because he told Univision yesterday that this was still all about the video. So apparently he's the only guy in the administration who hasn't gotten the memo yet.
Yeah, that's, you know, not reassuring to hear the president saying that. I just saw this story about I hadn't heard about cyber attacks on JP Morgan Chase, Bank of America. I mean, apparently the website for Bank of America, just some customers couldn't get into. it's called a denial of service attack, which is where they kind of, replicate lots of requests so that people can't log into the site. So I didn't notice it. But then the second thing, the idea that this could be, result of angry Muslims, that's, ominous enough. But the idea the Iranian government is doing to this, boy, oh boy, that, the cyber world, it's like there's this entire war going on that we just don't hear about. And you kind of wonder if the American public should be hearing about this. If Iran is attempting to, interfere with American businesses or attack us in this way, cyber warfare is this very strange, shadowy world in which it kind of the attitude of a lot of policymakers is, keep the American public in the dark. And I don't, we'll really be in the dark the day they take down the power grid. This seems like something we should be kind of aware of. And if it kind of unnerving, I guess this has not yet been confirmed. I understand in cyber warfare, it's really tough to figure out precisely who is behind it because they can mask who's doing the kind of cyber attacks and stuff like that. But it's just something to keep an eye on as we head into the weekend. With everything else going on in the world, there may just be this sense of, everybody's getting their punches in on the U.S. And cyber warfare is this very ominous, very unnerving area of warfare. It can affect, it can put lives at risk. And if nothing else, it's this very strange area in which retribution and reaction is not always clear. You look at this and you're thinking, gee whiz, the U.S. and Iran are at war. Just not a shooting war right now.
Jim, I was just tapped on the shoulder by William Devane. He's reminding me it's a great time to buy gold with all the chaos in the world.
Hey, let me tell you, because, Devane is popping up on my television all the time, Greg. He says, buy your gold now before the chaos starts. And, Greg, I assume you saw the Batman movie. considering how President Devane completely botched the siege of Gotham City, he did nothing in response to Bane's attacks. I am buying gold. It's all because of President Devane, not because of his policies, not because of the ads he's doing.
Oh, very good. Jim, have a great weekend. We'll talk to you later.
See you, Greg. See you Monday.
Jim Garrity of National Review. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us again on Monday for the next 3 Martini Lunch.